Hello, Bucks fans, and welcome to another edition of the Pewter Pulse. I'm Mark Cook, and this is Scott Reynolds.
Wait a minute. No, not Scott Reynolds this week.
The more handsome version of Scott Reynolds? Derek Fournier of whatthebuck.net. It is net, right?
It is .net.
Not XXX yet.
Okay. Though maybe next season.
That would be a good idea. I think you would see your numbers rise considerably.
They can't go down.
I'm not going to say anything now. Anyway, today's edition, Derek, we're going to be talking about the upcoming NFL draft. We're also going to be talking about what the Bucks have done and get your thoughts on what they've been able to do during this offseason from the time Lovie was fired until now as they prepare for the draft. And then you and I will debate a little bit about draft strategy coming up, the draft being less than 2 weeks away. So stay tuned. We'll be back with this edition of the Pewter Pulse. Welcome back, Bucks fans, to this edition of the Pewter Pulse. As I mentioned earlier, Derek Fournier of whatthebuck.net, also known as Old School. Derek's been a fan of this organization since when, the 50s?
Vaguely. Right. In utero. No, since 76. I'm an old guy, but yeah. I was only four.
Okay, well, we'll check your birth certificate later, but we'll just go along with it that he was four in 1976. I was six, actually, in 1976. Derek, Scott put out his Buccaneer 7-round mock draft on Monday. For the third consecutive mock draft, he's went with Sheldon Rankins, the defensive tackle from Louisville. And a lot of people initially scoffed when Scott came out with this, saying the Buccaneers already have Gerald McCoy. You being a guy that's been involved in football your whole life, whether it be playing or coaching or part of some developmental leagues across the pond, talk about why. And if you agree with Scott that bringing in another defensive tackle, another quick penetrator, one-gap kind of guy, could be a benefit to this defense.
Sure. I not just because I'm a bigger guy, but I've always said if you can get good, talented, fat guys, they're a good investment, right? And I don't mean that in a pejorative sense. But getting big guys, whether it's D-line folks or offensive line folks, you're making an investment that's going to last longer than a three-year window typically. You're going to get a 7-, 8-, 9-year window. So, you know, Rankins is obviously disruptive. He's a well-regarded prospect out of a strong program. McCoy being there or not really is immaterial in my mind. I am, and we'll talk about this later in one of the later segments, I'm a best player available kind of guy, and I want value. This is about an investment. When I draft someone, I don't want to draft them for 1 or 2 years of productivity. I want to draft someone that I get some good tape on, some good productivity on, and then I can invest to make a long-term play on. And if he gives us the flexibility that we need on that defensive line, then that's great. He's not the end guy that everyone wants, right? And we'll talk about that as well. Right. We want that edge rush. Everyone wants the glamour. Certainly in this era of the Von Millers of the world and that sort of thing, you think about those edge guys. But being able to be more disruptive in the middle, especially in a league that still has guys like Drew Brees roaming about, if you can collapse that pocket, get pressure in the middle, right? Quarterbacks can't step up to a pocket that doesn't exist.
Well, and you know, you bring up Drew Brees as you were talking about that. That's the person I was thinking about. Because does anybody in this division, really in the NFC, step up in the heat of pressure more? I mean, the Saints have spent a lot of money to have that protective pocket, right?
Absolutely.
Center two guards. And they allow some pressure from the outside from time to time. We saw Jacquees Smith have a heck of a game up in New Orleans last year coming off of the edge. But Drew has always been able to step up and keep his eyes down the field and make that throw at the last second or just get rid of the ball quickly. Having a guy, listen, if you're playing defensive tackle, you're the closest to the quarterback than a defensive end, right? So it's point A to point B. I love the idea of Gerald McCoy and Rankins lined up next to each other. And people say, well, you know, Rankins is a three technique, but he can play the five. He can play other positions along the defensive line. And something we saw the Seattle Seahawks do a few years ago is win a Super Bowl with five or four defensive ends at times, sometimes defensive tackles. It didn't matter what their position was. On third down or in passing downs, they put their four best guys to rush the passer. And I think that's what the Buccaneers would do if they do, in fact, end up with Rankins.
Well, and that's not just a Seattle concept, right? You know, Lovie Smith has done that in the past. A number of coaches have done that in the past. Some people call it a NASCAR package. You want your athletes in there.
Right.
Ages ago, oh gosh, now I'm not going to remember the kid's name, Florida State kid we used to put out in a sprinter stance with Raheem Morris.
Dakota Watson.
Dakota Watson.
Right.
You want to get that athleticism on the line, right, to disrupt the quarterback. And whatever you can do to do that's great. And if you get two athletes in the tackle spots, your stunt games become a lot more valid, right? That's not to downplay what Akeem Spence has done in the past and what other guys we've had at the nose. But when you get that extra athlete in the middle, it is disruptive. And Rankins isn't just your average run-of-the-mill nose tackle.
Right.
So having more talent there is not a bad thing, especially with some of the things we've done in free agency and the fact that we'll have camp fodder coming out as well that should provide a sort of a set of players that we can go after and create some more edge rush.
And Derek, that brings up a good point. I mean, certainly the Buccaneers need help on the edge. I mean, they need pass rushers. Everybody, and you know, I talked to Peter King up at the NFL owners meeting, and he said there's also 20 teams looking for an edge rusher.
Sure.
It's not like they just grow on trees and you can just find one and plug them in. If you could, the Buccaneers would have done that over the last few years, because it's been since Simeon Rice was here that they had a double-digit sack guy off of the edge. So, you know, you make a good point. There's going to be some other guys brought in. No one expected Jacquees Smith 2 years ago to do what he's done. And I'll tell you this. I've said it on this show before, and I've said it on different radio things. If you're looking for that double-digit sack guy, there's your guy. If he can stay healthy for 16 games. Well, 7.5 sacks last year. Think about the amount of time that he missed. If this guy plays a full 16 games and starts a full 16 games, I would bet everything I have, which is not much, but I would bet everything that I have that he would be that 10-plus sack guy.
And I like Jacquees Smith. I like what he brings to the game. Health is always an issue. You know, you can't put up the sacks if you're not in the game. The challenge I find with Jacquees Smith is, and I haven't seen enough of him here to know that I'm 100% right, but he seems to have one move, and that's his edge. It's speed. It's speed. It's speed, right? If I know as a tackle, or I know as a coach, that you're just a speed guy, I can strategize you out of the game.
Right.
That's why guys like Freeney, et cetera, over the years, who had more than one move off that edge, were the guys that were continually 12 and 13 sacks. And I love, you know, as Bucks fans, and I'm the fan, obviously you don't use the personal pronouns like I do, everyone wants another Simeon Rice. There's not a lot of them,
right?
But if you can get a guy who's 10 sacks, 11 sacks, strong against the run, sets the edge well, I don't know, a guy like Michael Bennett that we watched leave town, if you can get another one of those guys, then all of a sudden the game changes a little bit, because if you've got that guy on either side, right, and then someone normal on the other side, then the McCoys of the world can suddenly do the things that they are capable of doing.
Yeah.
Despite what some people say, who said he was single blocked all last year and was a clown, that's absolutely not correct.
Well, and you know, you bring up Michael Bennett. Here's a guy who the Buccaneers claimed off waivers, right?
Absolutely.
And turns out to be their most prolific sack guy for a couple years here. Goes on to Seattle, signs a big deal there. You know, has had success in the league. So, you know, you don't always have to try and find these guys with the number 9 pick. I mean, sometimes you do find them off the street, like a Jacquees Smith, and even like a Howard Jones last year that had a little bit of an impact. Look, one of the things that I think, you know, and you talk about Jacquees with one move, I think the fact that, you know, there's a new defensive line coach in town, Jay Hayes from Cincinnati, who came over here. Is that his name?
I'm not sure.
I'm positive it is.
Good. And, well done. You're the pro.
If it's not, we will edit this out. But he came over from Cincinnati, and you look at what he was able to do with Cincinnati's defensive line over the last few years. And the Buccaneers, I believe, are very fortunate to be able to get this guy. His contract was up. Dirk talked about it at the owners' meeting. You know, he's friends with Marvin Lewis. He called. He said, "Do you mind?" And they brought him aboard. You know, again, for a guy like Jacquees Smith, entering his third season, maybe the message was lost, what Joe Cullen was telling him. Maybe this guy gets to him a little, you know, gets through to him a little bit more. You never know. But he's certainly had proven success in Cincinnati, and I think he can help Jacquees maybe develop more than that one move. Because certainly you can't have success sustained in the NFL as defensive end if all you have is just one move.
Well, and Joe Cullen's a great coach. And if you talk to the guys who played for him, I think a lot of the guys had a lot of respect for what Joe brought. But coaches can only tell you so much. You have to go do.
Right.
For the defensive line, you think about a couple of things. Speed, length, leverage, lean, right? All these sorts of things. And all those guys got to have it. When I remember Kevin Carter back in the day, and, you know, he would talk about his hands. And the thing that kept him in the league so long was his hands. Defensive linemen have got to work on hand drills. The defensive lines of the past that were so great here in Tampa, they were disciplined. They may not have sounded disciplined when you looked at some of the flamboyant Warren Sapp antics, and Simeon was certainly a character, right? These guys' hands were ridiculous. You did not get hands on these guys. And when I watch defensive linemen at all levels, that's the thing that you look for first. If they can keep that offensive big meat hook off of them, then they can do something. And whether that's, you know, getting around, dipping the shoulder and getting around the edge, or whether it's getting their hands in and then ripping through, we've got to have a coaching staff that drills this and then gets the players not just to hear it, but look at it on film and then bring it into reality.
Well, me being an offensive guy, I don't care if they even practice defense. Just go score 50 points a game, and I think they'll win.
Makes sense.
I think that's what Dirk Cutter thinks, too. No, that's not true. Or else he wouldn't have brought in a Mike Smith. And
sure.
Mike Smith certainly has a wealth of experience, successful defensive coordinator in this league. Players seem to respect him. We've talked to a handful of players already who seem super excited to play for this guy. Conditioning drills start April 11th. Things are about to get underway. People ask all the time, what do we do in the offseason? There is no offseason.
Yeah, not anymore. The days of an offseason in the NFL are long since gone. And even beyond the drills that are team-related, these guys who decide that they're going to become professionals and stay in the league a long time, they're working on their own. They've got their own trainers, their own regimens.
Sure.
Right? They're going to come in better shape. And, you know, now I don't believe we're going to see a significant change, like from going from one gap to a two gap where you need to weight up or weight down or whatever. But these guys are going to have to come in great shape and ready to take on whatever the education is that Mike Smith and his staff bring.
One other thing before we finish up this first segment is, as I put out a first round NFL 31 teams, because the Patriots are sitting at home crying because they don't have a number one pick this time.
They've already collected all their draft picks.
Well, that's true. They're fine there.
Yeah, they did a pretty good job.
Yeah,
on the street is those guys know how to run a franchise.
They're not bad. They're not bad. And Jason Light coming from that tree up there, which is good. But, you know, in my draft, you know, the debate right now, if you're looking at the top of the NFL order, is it Jalen Ramsey? Do you draft a defensive back number one overall? And the Titans, John Robinson, the former executive here in Tampa Bay, now the general manager in Tennessee, now has to work on that and figure out the debate. Is it Jalen Ramsey, who I said early on, being a Florida State fan and following him and knowing people on that staff and talking about Jalen over the last couple of years, I had a feeling he was really going to blow up at the combine, and then he excelled even more so at his pro day. I mean, here's a 6'1", 6'2 guy running a 4.41, you know, I think a 37-inch vertical. I mean, the guy is just an athletic freak of nature. But the thing that really sets him apart, because there's a lot of great athletes in this draft, is the mentality. And I don't want to compare him to Jameis Winston as far as leadership goes, because Jalen isn't that rah-rah, you know, come on, guys, I'm going to rally the troops kind of guy. But he is a guy who is solely focused on nothing but football. You don't see him on social media and things like that. And Jalen was a guy, talking to a Florida State coach, who told me, he's a guy that doesn't understand why a team needs a leader. He believes you should be your own leader. It doesn't make any sense to him why your goal every single play is not to destroy your opponent in front of him. So to draft him as a guy that's going to come in and set a leadership tone, as Jameis Winston did for the Buccaneers this year, would be a mistake. But if you want a good athlete who's dedicated, a great athlete who's dedicated to the game of football and becoming better, I think Jalen is that guy. But the debate is now, Marcus Mariota got beat up last year, finished the season not on injured reserve, but standing on the sidelines wearing the ball cap and the clipboard. Guy got banged up quite a bit, and it wasn't from scrambling. It was shots in the pocket that he took. So then you've got Laremy Tunsil for out of Ole Miss. If you're John Robinson, what are you doing with that number one pick?
I do not typically want DBs in that top three spot, and that's not to disparage DBs. They do a great job. And if you're a team that's going to run a lot of man, and you can erase somebody, if you can erase someone's ex. Right, the Revis Island days, or, you know, obviously there are other more current examples of that, right. Even in, you know, the Norman example, then yeah, your defense would go after that. But I've got to protect my quarterback. My quarterback's my most expensive asset. Generally speaking, he's the leader of the team. So if I can get that franchise tackle, I'm going to go get the franchise tackle. And yeah, there are misses. There have been recent misses. But I think that the tape is out there, and you know, you and I are talking a little bit off tape about the differences in offensive line tactics, and that's one of the things that's going to become more and more obvious over the next 3 or 4 years. The teams in college that are running these spread offenses, there's nothing wrong with spread. I'm not here to attack the spread offense. But if you're not running a pro-style offense, if you're not used to pass pro, if you're not used to handling that process, you're not going to have the kind of success in the pros that you need.
Well, at least not early. It's going to take you longer to develop, and I think that's what we're seeing with some of these guys who have been drafted in the top 15 over the last few years. There's been some guys that have succeeded. There's been some guys that were drafted that they thought were franchise left tackles, which are now moving to different spots over on the other side, maybe playing right tackle. But Tunsil looks like the real deal. And, you know, the guy's got a ton of athletic ability. A guy that size that has the footwork that he does and the athleticism really doesn't come around a lot. And so, you know, the next question is, if the next best tackle drops down to number 9, and that's Ronnie Stanley out of Notre Dame, and from what I've heard from scouts, they don't think there's a big difference between these two.
Right.
So if you could find a franchise left tackle at number 9, if you're the Buccaneers, how do you pass that up?
I can't, right? And I know that that's an unpopular pick typically with fans. Fans want a glitzy pick, the quarterbacks, the wide receivers, the big hitting defensive backs, a lot of sack guys. But I think if you can get that 10-year big guy that protects Jameis Winston, your biggest asset, then I think you've got to do that. And that's, again, we've got a decent crop here in town, right?
Right.
But I think if you can improve, right, at that position, then everything gets better. And it gives you a ton of flexibility. It also allows Dirk Koetter and his offensive staff, if you have more time for Jameis Winston, regardless of why,
right,
I can put more weapons on the field. I don't have to keep another guy back in protection. I don't have to go max pro like we did last year a lot of times. I can get those receivers running around and let Jameis really throw the ball around the field.
Well, that concludes the first segment of the Pewter Pulse. We're going to come back, and Derek and I are going to not debate, but we're going to talk a little bit about what has happened during this offseason. Scott and I have shared our thoughts on it, Derek. We want to get your opinion on some of the moves that this organization has made since January when Lovie Smith was fired. We'll be back right after this for the next segment of the Pewter Pulse. Welcome back, Buccaneer fans, to this edition of the Pewter Pulse. I'm Mark Cook, along with Derek Fournier, also known as Old School from WhatTheBuck.net. Real quickly, Derek, you've got a charity event coming up. Let's talk about that.
Great. Yeah, we've our second annual golf tournament. It's called the Trunk Slammers Invitational. Those of you who know what the Buck does, you know that we have a charitable organization that's a 501c3 called What the Buck Really Matters. We average about $1,000 per tailgate that goes to local charities. And last year, we got together with One Voice Foundation, which is a group here in Tampa that advocates for patients in pediatric cancer process, both the patient themselves as well as their family. And we've become very attached to that particular charitable organization. And we said, you know, I think we're ready to throw a golf tournament. And for any of you who've tried to throw a golf tournament, it is a monumental undertaking. We worked our backsides off, and last year we were able to raise just over $20,000 for One Voice at the event, which was tremendous. It was bigger than we had hoped it could be, to be honest, after talking to some well-funded other people that had not been that successful. And so we're back again. We signed a five-year contract to do this, and at the end of the 5 years, the course that we signed with is going to take the average and donate that to One Voice as well. Wow. So this year is April 16th. So I would say it's after tax season, but because of the way it fell, tax season actually ends on the 18th. But out at Bardmore Golf and Tennis Club in Largo, if you go out to the website, WTBReallyMattersTSI.org, or to WhatTheBuck.net, there's links also on Pewter Report. Thank you guys for publicizing the event. You can register as a golfer, as an individual, or a foursome, or as a sponsor. We've got some great sponsors. The local area has really stepped up, and we have a good event. We have a really good event.
I'm really impressed with some of the raffle prizes and packages. I think I'm just going to show up and put money in for the raffles because I'm a terrible golfer. But really, you've got some tremendous packages. Some of these packages are worth well over $1,000. I saw you have a necklace and an earring set worth over $2,500, if I'm not mistaken. So there's some tremendous prizes. Even if you're not a golfer, people can come out to the event.
Yeah, you can buy a dinner ticket. Actually, we're selling dinner tickets to the Partee because we have to do play on words when you do a golf event.
Right.
About 6 o'clock, we're going to have a dinner, a wonderful dinner out there in the event tent at Bardmore. You'll get to see all the raffle presents. You can buy raffle tickets. You're also going to meet some of the kids and their families that are being assisted by One Voice. And One Voice is opening the first ever school for children going through cancer treatment so they can continue to go to school. It's called the One Voice Academy. So you'll get a chance to meet some of those kids and some of those families. And we got a couple of old bucks that are coming out there as well. We call the kids our celebrities, mm-hmm. right? Because they're out there on the course. And we call the players or famous people, like you would have been, ambassadors. And they go out there and have a good time. So, yeah, if you want to go out to the website and buy a Partee ticket, it's $35 for dinner, includes your drinks and food. And then you can come in there and buy the raffle tickets. All of our raffle packages, and there are 10, are valued over $1,000.
Wow, impressive stuff. And goes to a great cause, and you guys do tremendous work year-round, you and Cheryl, and I'm not going to try and mention everybody because I'll forget somebody, but you have some dedicated fans and people that are out there making a difference in the community, and certainly Pewter Report respects the heck out of that.
So. Well, we appreciate the support from you and also from all the folks who come to the tailgates and come out to the golf event. If you have any questions, you can find us on the website, and we'll let you know about it.
Very good. Back to football. Now that everybody's cursing us because we weren't talking about football, we'll get back to football. This offseason, I know from reading your tweets, you weren't exactly enamored with the firing of Lovie Smith. Talk about that a little bit. Share your thoughts.
Sure. So I am not a fan of what I consider to be a knee-jerk reaction. And I know that a lot of folks say that the record was indefensible and there were certainly some things that were not going well. But I felt, and what I do on my show and what you guys do as well, we try and go beneath the surface, right? I watch a lot of film. We do a lot of analysis. I felt as though we saw a lot of improvement. I thought there was a plan in place. And I don't think that you can become a revolving door for head coaches and maintain any level of professionalism. Now, I think that Jason Light is a tremendous addition. I think that what they're doing in the front office is very strong. But I would have definitely given Lovie one more year to see if the plan that had been put in place, right? We went free agents first, and a lot of them did mm-hmm. not work out. There were a lot of reasons for that, right? But that led us to Jameis. We had a first year with Jameis, some improvement going along the way. I think that the move was a bad one. Now, you've said, and when we've talked both off-air and on-air, if you think that it's the wrong move, right, pulling the Band-Aid off is the right thing. And I agree. I just didn't see enough that I would have made that decision. Now, I'm not privy to all the things that they are.
And I do think maybe there were some things behind the scenes. I believe that you know, there may have been some, I hate to use the word power struggle, but we have a feeling that some people at the top wanted some things to change. And Lovey may not have been willing to make some of those changes. So at that point, what do you do? Yeah. Now, again, do the owners have a right to meddle in football operations? If your franchise is valued at $980 million, almost $1 billion, I'd almost say yes. I mean, it's yours. You own it. You can do what you want to do. There's also a school of thought that, you know, leave football to the football people. But we applaud the Glazers for not standing pat if they felt that that was what needed to be done with the organization. I talked to Joel down in Boca Raton at the NFL owners meeting, had a one-on-one with him, and we talked about that. And again, he's not ever going to reveal, you know, the Glazers, you've
sure.
known them since they've been owners here. When they bought it from the Culver House Trust back in, what, 95, 94, around there. But, you know, they're not guys that are going to throw people under the bus, in a sense. They're not going to pat themselves on the back, in a sense. They kind of keep things fairly private. And that's fine. That's a prerogative. Again, they're the owners here. But Joel said, listen, when we looked at everything at the end of the year, we took everything to account. We talked to some people. We looked at everything as a whole and thought this was the best move for the organization going forward. I would love to know what those details were. We're probably never going to know all of those things, but it is what it is. They own the team. They can do what they want. They've done it. It doesn't matter what you and I think.
Absolutely.
It's done. Dirk Cutter's in place now. Your thoughts on Dirk Cutter taking over?
I like Dirk Cutter. I liked him as offensive coordinator. I think that quite often, just like the backup quarterback is usually the most popular player on a team,
sure.
Not here, though Mike Glennon still has quite a bit of popularity, and if Jameis right. throws two interceptions, I assure you the Mike Glennon crowd yep. will come out loud
yes.
and proud once
yes.
again. But coordinators are always held in esteem when you do well,
mm-hmm.
right? Now, just because you're a great coordinator does not make you a great head coach.
True.
That's not to say I don't think Dirk Cutter can be a great head coach. I think he probably can be, right? If we were going to make the move we made, I think Dirk Cutter was the right move. It allowed some level of continuity, right? You kept the continuity for Jameis in the offense, which was important. They did an important thing, which is they went out there and got a seasoned leader for the defense in Mike Smith.
Mm-hmm.
I think that was really critical.
Right.
When you make the move with Dirk Cutter,
right.
not that he's not seasoned, but you've got to give that defense someone that they can lean on, because Lovey was a defensive identity along with Leslie Frazier.
Right.
So I think that overall, if that was the direction they decided to make, regardless of the reason, like you said, I think they've done the right things since then.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said, I like what Dirk did as an offensive coordinator. I'm looking forward to seeing what he does as a head coach. I like his frankness. But some of that is the theater of football now, right? Like you talk about, what was the reason? What were they evaluating? It's the soap opera of football
right.
that I find so distasteful, because we're never going to know the answer.
Right.
Right. And people say, well, why don't they tell us what they mean at their press conference? Because they don't have to.
Right.
Right. I know you want people to get out there and say, well, you know, Gerald McCoy was dragging ass today or whatever. And they're not going to do that.
Right.
So, but I like Dirk. And I think that the draft will be interesting. I think that the offseason's done well. Jason Light has endeared himself to the fan base, including me, by making some very strong moves.
Mm-hmm.
So it's going to be interesting to see, because this really is his team now, in so much
sure.
as it's anyone's team but the Glazers, because they're going to evaluate at the end of the year, and based on what they see, they're going to decide whether he's the right general manager, just like they decided whether Lovey was the right head coach.
And fortunes can change. I mean, he had a heck of a draft last year with Winston and Marpet and Kwan and Donovan Smith. I mean, that doesn't happen where you have four impact starters with your first four picks very often. And he was able to do that last year. Can he do that this year? That's the key. Boy, if he could come up with, you know, three impact starters out of these seven picks, you know, four, you know, guys that have potential to be long-term players in this organization, I think would be huge. But when we talk about head coaches, you know, I've always said a lot of guys can be great head coaches, but the problem is the organization surrounding them. And it's just like a player. There have been talented guys who end up being busts in the NFL after their drafts, but they were in the wrong system with the wrong coach and in the wrong scheme and everything else. And I really think, you know, I think Dirk Cutter is going to succeed, because I think this organization is on an upswing, and I mean from the top all the way down to the bottom. I believe that the front office is as solid as it's been, maybe than it's ever been. I mean, there have been great times when Rich McKay was a GM, and there were things that Bruce Allen did that people applauded, even Mark Dominic to a degree. But I think right now, if you look at the confidence level, and we're in a presidential election right now, what's that confidence poll or whatever they call it? You know what I mean? How confident are you in the organization, how it's being run? I think if you poll Buccaneer fans, it would be very, very high. Maybe as high as it's been since the Super Bowl years, to be honest with you. And so I think Dirk Cutter's coming into a good situation. He obviously has a guy that he feels is a franchise quarterback. The organization does, and I think proved last year that he still has a ceiling, but is very capable and will be very good for this organization for a long time. He's brought in Mike Smith. I think there is some pieces on the defense here. Again, it's not like he's starting over from scratch. Right. So I think he's coming to the right situation. Whether he's a great personal head coach or not, we don't know. But sometimes mediocre coaches become great coaches because of the people surrounding them. Sometimes great coaches look poor because of the organization that surrounds them. But I think Dirk Cutter's got a great organization around him right now at this time.
Like so many things, great coaches are often defined by the results and nothing else.
Right.
So we won't be able to tell how great a coach Dirk Cutter is until after the fact. There's been some terrific coaches, some educators, some teachers of the game, some molders of future professional athletes. You think of the Marty Schottenheimers over years, right? These sort of guys who, you know, you wouldn't go get now.
Right.
But that doesn't mean they're not good coaches.
Sure.
That's why it's always funny to me when we have these conversations about, oh, well, such and so is a hack.
Right.
The amount of football that these guys know dwarfs what most of us know.
Absolutely.
Right? And that's like when we say a player is a hack. Guess what? Get out on the track with him and see what kind of hack he is, right?
Exactly.
So I'm excited. I like Dirk Cutter. It's not about not liking Dirk Cutter. It's about I didn't like the way the process went. But I'm a Bucs fan. It certainly impacted me, and we talk about this a lot, right? You guys are professional media. I'm not. I'm fringe media, and I use personal pronouns. This, I feel, is my team, right? And so I was hurt in so much as a guy can be hurt by this sort of stuff. So my tweets have been down. We haven't done a podcast since the end of the year. I'm still recovering and figuring out what I think about this and what we're going to do moving forward. I can tell you this. I did renew my season tickets.
So I
didn't give up. Right? The closest I ever came to giving them up was in the waning years of Shiano. Mm-hmm. Right? So we'll be back tailgating. We'll be back doing it. I've just got to find my sea legs. And I think the draft will be the thing that will let me do that. And having guys like Jameis Winston going back and signing Doug Martin, you know, getting some of these guys in free agency, doing what I think are the right things, building a franchise with permanence. Right? If you let people go, like a Doug Martin who came back and did what he was supposed to, when we look at a thing like Mike Bennett, and many of us look at that as a black eye on the organization, we gave him not one but two prove-it seasons. Right, that's why he didn't come back. There was no chance of him coming on that second year. Anyone who watched the team knew he wasn't coming back because we had slapped him in the face not once but twice.
Right.
You can't do that. And they didn't do that with a guy like Doug Martin. They went, they let the market get set, and they signed him back.
Yeah.
And you do that, and then players stay. And that, as a fan of the franchise, is something I can get behind.
And that's something Joe Glazer said, because we talked about the re-signing of Martin and Levante David and Gerald McCoy. And he says, really, his thought is the first sign that an organization is on the upswing is when you're able to draft and re-sign your own
guys. Absolutely.
And that's something that they feel is very important. It's certainly something they did back during their successful run in the 90s with the, you know, with the Warren Sapps, with the Rondé Barbers, the John Lynches, and so on and so forth. So work done and other guys. So anyway, listen, that wraps up this segment. We got one more. We're going to come back, and we're going to talk a little bit about what we think the Buccaneers should do as far as draft strategy goes. This guy thinks they should draft Robert Aguayo with the number 9 pick, the kicker out of Florida State.
Guaranteed points, baby.
Guaranteed points. We need a good kickoff man. We'll see if that's exactly what Derek actually has to say. Right after this, we'll be back with the Pewter Polls. Welcome back, Bucs fans. I'm Mark Cook. This is Derek Fournier, also known as What the Buck, from whatthebuck.xx. No?
I'm old school.
Okay.
From whatthebuck.net,
.net.
Not
.xxx. I don't know why XXX always pops in my head.
The reality of the situation, Mark, is you're used to Scott leading and you following. And so, Scott, if you're out there listening to this show, please come back, because Mark is floundering. He's brought in a hack fringe media guy to help out.
Right.
So please get back here.
I'm perspiring. I don't like this. But anyway, we're going to continue on. This is our third segment. And in this segment, we're going to talk about draft strategy. Derek and I, you and I were talking before we came on camera. And you and I feel the same way. When you have a top 10 pick, you've got to go best player available, right? I mean, you can't limit yourself and say, well, we really need a pass rusher, but if your next pass rusher on the board is your number 20 guy on your overall board, you can't reach. You can't just because it's
you can't reach that way, right? People talk about reaching.
Right.
Right. And if you're at 9, right, and you trade up to get someone, they think it's a reach because they had them rated as a 10.
Right.
That's one thing.
Yes.
But when you're dragging someone up from the lower third because you happen to be at 9, you can't do it. And best player available, with the exception of kickers, right?
What?
No offense.
What?
And I know they're guaranteed points, but I feel like you can get legs elsewhere. I'm not going to go draft a kicker at 9.
It worked okay for the Raiders with Sebastian Janikowski in the first round.
It did. Did it lead to a Super Bowl?
Again, you're right. They got to one and they got smoked. Right. So, you know, no,
They didn't lose by a field goal in that game.
No?
No.
You sure?
Isn't it
48-47?
It was not. It was not. So, yeah, no offense to kickers. I love the kickers. It's an important aspect of the game, even though the NFL continues to marginalize kickoffs with the way they change the rules.
Yeah.
I'm waiting for a good kicker. By the way, good kickers out there, give me that rainbow kick and drop it on the 5-yard line. Make them fair catch.
Sure.
Right? That's a free tip. Make them fair catch. It's a live ball.
Maybe you should be the Bucs special teams coach.
No, I hate special teams. Okay. No, I love it. It's a wee fence. But no, I think best player available is your only choice there. And even if it's someone that you don't think you need.
Well, and because you don't need this person today doesn't mean you're not going to need him 2 days into camp. Look at Dante Fowler Jr., right, with the Jaguars last year.
Goes
down second day workout. I mean,
In non-contact.
You just don't know. I mean, and can you ever have enough good offensive linemen? For the first time this year, let's go back to last year. That's what I'm saying this year. The Buccaneers actually had depth. They deactivated DeMar Dotson at times when he was healthy. When's the last time this Buccaneer team has been able to deactivate quality offensive linemen? I mean, they've got depth on this offensive line. Now, Logan Mankin's retiring. Mm-hmm. Certainly created a void. But they feel like they've got that void filled with Sweezy. I like to call him Sweezy, but let's call him Sweezy by his real name because he's mean enough to kill me.
Absolutely.
And he watches this. I don't know if that's true.
But if it is, you're dead.
Yes, it is. Sorry, JR. But the point being, you know, as you say, you may not need him today, but you don't know if you're going to need him tomorrow. Best player available. Now, with that said, you're the GM. Throw a couple scenarios out there of guys that you would love to see be available at that number 9 guy. Now let's not get crazy and say Tunsil because he's not going to be there. But some of those top 10 guys, if you had a choice.
Well, this is the thing, right? And you know this for the years. This is our 10th complete year for doing with the Buck. And I'm not a college guy. I went to UCF. Our football program was non-existent when I was there.
Yeah, that's
right.
That's
so true. So I don't really watch a lot of college football. I leave that draft to draft experts like you guys and Pulowski and these guys. They do a great job. I look at positions and I look at players as assets, and I do that only when I'm evaluating the franchise, right? Because I, as a coach, I ended up getting very personal with my players. I like to know them and know who they are as humans. But as an organization, you have to look at them as assets. So I am always going to rate line, offensive line first, defensive line, right? Mm-hmm. Now, if I get a best player available who's a linebacker, who's a just Lawrence Taylor changes the position kind of thing, then maybe I look. But I think our linebackers are pretty good.
Let me interrupt you here because that brings up something. We have people on Pewter Report message boards that are all over Miles Jack. Great athlete, right? Mm-hmm. This guy could be, I mean, okay, it's crazy to say he's a Hall of Famer, but I mean, this guy has the athletic ability and talent, appears to have the desire and the drive to be a guy who's going to be a perennial Pro Bowler and who knows what happens down the road. The problem, again, here's best player available potentially. You almost have to take him if he's available, even though you've got a guy in Quan Alexander that you think is going to be a perennial Pro Bowler down the road and a guy in Levante David already. So, but if you're assuming that those guys are going to stay healthy all year, where is Jack going to be? Would you draft a guy? And here's a question. If he's best player available, do you take him because he's best player available when he's going to be on the field 40% of the snaps? Or are you going to let him compete and maybe take Levante's or Quan's job?
I bring in the best player and let him compete because – and it's funny. I mentioned Raheem Morris now twice on the show. Back in the day where we thought we had two quarterbacks that could end up being really solid, Josh Freeman and then Josh Johnson, right? He said, well, I hope we're in the position that the Chargers were, right, back when they had Phillip Rivers and Drew Brees.
Right.
When you have assets like that, if you're deep there,
right,
that gives Jason Light a lot of latitude.
Sure.
All of a sudden, the thing that never happens in the NFL can really happen, and you can start moving some players,
right?
Now, I'm not saying you want to, but having that depth, yeah, you hate having a guy on the sideline who's better than any of the linebackers across from you who's not playing. Guess what? That's telling you you're in a good position.
Yeah.
Now, when I look at the Buccaneers organization, is there someplace that we are just so bad that we have to have a better player? And that's why I think the Hargreaves discussions, right, these guys getting a cornerback, this sort of thing. I don't know what our defensive plan is going to be, our coverage plan is going to be next year.
Right.
But I don't think all of a sudden we're going to put guys on islands and that's what we're going to do. I feel like we're going to be running a fairly heavy combination of zone.
Mm-hmm.
And I just feel as though those are guys we can get way lower than 9.
No, I agree. But
so I think there's enough of the big guys up there that I don't have to go further than line to pick best player available.
Well, you know, it's the fun time about this draft. I mean, last year the Buccaneers had the number 1 overall pick, and it was the Winston-Mariota debate. You know, this year it's kind of nice because you're still top 10, so there's still some drama there. Let's be honest. The Buccaneers are picking number 26. There's not nearly the debate or the discussion because the average fan, once you get out of the top 15, maybe it's not even hurt. And I'll be honest with you. I did my mock draft, and I'm studying guys, and for you know, there were times I had to stop and think, who is this guy exactly? Oh, yeah, Robinson. Okay, he played defensive tackle at Alabama. Again, not household names, sure, but guys that are going to be multimillionaires here in the next couple weeks that the average fan doesn't know a whole lot about. So it is nice to be in the top 10. I will say this, though. I don't know if I can tell you who, but you can figure it out. There was a member of the Buccaneers front office who immediately after the season said, I will never, ever, ever want this organization to pick in the top 10 again as long as I'm here. And we won't. So figure out who that was. But so the Buccaneers, they like having that top 10 pick, but they don't ever want to have it again. Because if they have it again, that means they had another 6-10 season. Exactly.
Right. Yeah, you don't – it's the way the system is built, you don't want to be on that end of the system. Right, you'd much rather be in the Patriots position,
sure,
where you're going around and fabricating ways to get talent in because you're so good every year. Right. Listen, we can say we hate the Patriots all we want.
Oh, absolutely.
They do a lot of things right, guys. Yep. Right. So if you can be one of those teams that is always in Super Bowl contention every year, that I mean, I remember I was spoiled during a period of my Bucks fandom. Right, during the Tony Dungy years, it was not a matter of whether we're going to the playoffs.
Right.
It was how we were going to the playoffs and when we got to play the Eagles.
Yeah.
Right. So, so I hope we get back there soon.
Very good. Derek, I really appreciate you joining us and filling in for Scott. I just want to let you know that I'm probably going to fire Scott from this and bring you aboard full-time as the Pewter Pulse co-host of the show. You've done such a great job. That's how impressive you are.
I hear you guys have a lucrative compensation package, so I'm looking very forward to the stipulations.
I'm
going to
double Scott's salary.
Oh, my God.
Whatever he's making doing this show, I'm going to double it for you if you'll come aboard. But anyway, hopefully you can come back again because Scott stays busy all the time and and I'm sure he'll be back for our next edition. But if not, I'm going to be bugging you and calling you. You do a great job. What else? Daisy Charlotte did a tremendous job producing this show once again. We will be back in a week or so with another edition of the Pewter Pulse. Real quick, where do they go to find out about the golf tournament?
The website is WTB Really Matters, TSI, as in Trunk Slammers Invitational. org. Or you can go to whatthebuck.net. We have a big banner ad for it. They have a you have a banner ad on your site as well. And we'll get you guys hooked up with whatever it is you want.
Appreciate it, Derek. Thanks a lot for watching. This has been the Pewter Pulse. I'm Mark Cook, along with Derek Fournier, saying until next time.